Good evening, I'm Chris Oakes, and welcome to our candidate forum featuring the two individuals vying to represent the 83rd District in the Ohio House of Representatives. We apologize for getting started a little bit late this evening, but we are joined by incumbent Republican John Cross and challenger Democrat Claire Osborne. Welcome to both of you this evening. Most of the questions, which neither candidate has seen in advance, will be directed generally to both of you. We're going to allow 2 minutes for responses. Follow-up questions or further discussion will be allotted 1 minute of time, and we'll begin with opening remarks of 2 minutes each, and we'll finish with closing remarks of 2 minutes each. So with that, ground rules laid in quick fashion, let's begin with opening remarks, and Claire, we'll start with you.
Yes. So thank you so much for having me, and thank you, John, for being here today. I'm running for Ohio House here in the 83rd. I care about our community, and I am permanently passionate about the people who live here. And I feel too long poor policy decisions have been made in the local and state level that have really impacted our community and our community's well-being. We have people who every day are struggling, and I've seen it in my own family when my dad lost his job in an automotive factory several years ago. Our family was crushed, and we had to figure out a way to make ends meet to get to the other side. Luckily, my dad was able to go back to school, and we were able to come out of it. But that wasn't without a lot of unnecessary struggle, and it wasn't without a lot of support from our family and our friends. My mother, I've talked a lot about as well. You know, she joined the military right after high school so that she could have a better life. And now she's a public school teacher and has been for many years now. And each year, her job is made harder and harder by the policy decisions that are being made. And so I'm really running because I care about people and I want to see people succeed right here in the 83rd. Thank you.
John?
Thanks, Chris, and thanks to WFIN for hosting this forum, and thanks for holding the line open for a few minutes while we made our way from Kenton to Findlay. You know, the good news was I was stuck behind several trucks, but for the first time in a long time, I actually was behind a truck that had a bunch of new vehicles in it. So it was actually good to see that commerce and particularly new cars are coming to car dealer lots, which has been challenging for our businesses. I'm proud to serve in the 83rd District as your Ohio House representative, and I'm running for re-election for my third term. We can serve 2 years, 4 2-year terms, and I'll be running for my third term here. And over the last 4 years, it's been a great honor to represent people of Hancock County, Hardin County, and part of Logan County. And quite frankly, I'm pleased with the redistricting results so far, that we were able to keep all of Hancock County together and Hancock County not being split under the potential redistricting. I'm proud to continue to champion and represent our communities and our constituents. I try to champion common sense and conservative values. People who know me know I stand up strong and fight for our rights and freedoms. I said from day one, 4 years ago, when I kind of campaign mantra, who knew how important that would be during the fight to save strong risks. And so I have done that. I believe in the legislature, you have to be both accountable and accessible. We have certainly been very accessible to our constituents, and I believe I've been very passionate in the first 2 terms, and I'm looking forward to talking about those subject matters here tonight.
We'll begin with the fact that this coming year, state lawmakers will take up the task of creating Ohio's next 2-year operating budget. What are your priorities for the state budget, and in what area or areas should the state dedicate more resources? And we'll begin with Mr. Cross.
Yeah, great. I have had an honor to serve on the Finance Committee both the first and second term, and I look forward to continuing the serving on the Finance Committee to help build a balanced state budget. One thing that's great in Ohio compared to Washington, D.C., is we have to balance a budget. We have to have it done and completed and to the governor and signed by June 30th of 2023. And the priorities for me is I was pleased to help pass and champion a budget last time that include one of the largest tax breaks for the state of Ohio for Ohioans. It was a $2 billion tax cut. We were able to remove one of five tax brackets and really help get more money back into people's pocketbooks from the state level. I chair the Higher Education Subcommittee on Finance. And I think one thing that I'm going to be working on in this budget, if the constituents will have me back as their representative, is focusing on our workforce. I was proud to champion House Bill 2 in the first General Assembly I was in that created the Tech Cred program. In this last budget, we put $58 million into that, and it has helped thousands of Ohioans upskill their careers and skills to have better jobs and better opportunities. In addition, those employers have helped to grow their workforce with more skillful people. I think it's important that we keep that program going. Another thing, Chris, I think is important is my Grow Ohio Act, which we've talked before on your radio show. One thing I've always said is that, and I think Claire and I will agree on, is that we have the best workforce in America right here in Ohio. I don't say that we have a workforce problem. I've always told people we have a population problem. And so I'm going to be working on and explaining more about the Grow Ohio Act a little bit later in the program and ways to retain and attract people right here in Ohio.
Ms. Osborne, again, what are your priorities for the state budget, and what area or areas should the state dedicate more resources?
Yes. So I really think that we need to ensure that we're investing in public education first and foremost. I know that we have a lot of money that will sometimes not go into our public education in a constitutional way in the past. You know, I applaud the State House for passing 2 years ago the first constitutionally funded public school bills, but we need to ensure that when we want to build our population, that people know that Ohio has the best public educations. If people want to be able to raise a family here and we want to be able to fill our workforce jobs, then we need to have things already here that show we are better than the alternative options. I also want to ensure that we are supporting recovery services, but those support services. We throw a lot of money into treatment and we throw a lot of money into prevention, but we don't properly fund those support services that make us whole communities where belonging can be found right here. And so I think when we move forward and we're trying to attract people to our state, when we're ensuring that we are having balanced budgets, we need to be a little more creative than we have in the past when we are looking at various bills that need to occur. I think some of the most important things that you can do as a state rep is not only just direct money to places where it needs to go, but also to ensure that you're creating a community and a culture of belonging for all people so that you can attract the most and the best into your areas, not spending time on various things that increase the divide and increase the people's debate on whether or not they want to come not only to our area, but to the entire state of Ohio.
Governor DeWine earlier this month announced a partnership with six other Midwest governors to establish a regional hydrogen coalition to develop market, supply chain, and workforce supporting hydrogen energy across the region. General Motors and Ford have announced plans incorporating Ohio into their plans for electric vehicles. What should Ohio's role be in the area of renewable or alternative energy, and where is the line drawn between what is good for Ohio and what isn't? With respect to that, I'm thinking about the state law passed last year, as Mr. Cross knows, giving local entities authority to implement broader regulations on the development of new utility-scale wind and solar projects. So, what should Ohio's role be with respect to renewable and alternative energy? What's good and what isn't for the state of Ohio? And for this one, we'll start with Ms. Osborne.
Yes, thank you. So I truly believe that our communities should be able to decide what goes into the needs of green energies, especially to, you know, our counties have over the solar and wind now. Those same restrictions are not put in place for new natural gas, for example. And so for one, see consistency through all of that. But I also think Ohio should be a leader in these types of energy. The more we diversify where we get our energy from, the more that we don't have to rely on any one thing is going to be good overall for our communities. And I really want to see our landowners get to decide what they do with their land. If a small local farmer wants to lease some of their land to wind and solar and be able to diversify their own income, then they should have the power to do that with their land. I don't think the government should be coming in and telling them what they can and cannot do. I also always like to talk about public rail. So when we're talking about electric vehicle charging stations and the move to electric vehicles, I really hope that Ohio fights to become a leader in public transportation. I and a friend just went down to Cincinnati concert a couple weeks ago, and we were so upset that we could not watch the Browns game while we were driving. We had to listen to it. And all I could think about was if we had public rail, we could take the train to Cincinnati and back and be able to watch the Browns game. So I hope I'm a leader in those things.
Mr. Cross.
Yeah, thank you, Chris, for that question. First, Ohio should be above everything, every energy source possible. We don't create enough energy demand for the energy usage that happens in Ohio. So we should have the best nuclear, coal, natural gas, renewables. We'll take everything that we can, because we still have to rely on a what they call a PJM market, and we have to rely on 13 other states to help generate that energy. I'd like to see Ohio become much like Texas and some other states, generate enough demand for that usage. One of the challenges that I see differently in my party versus the Democrat Party, particularly at the federal level and at the state level, is that we have an abundance of natural gas here in Ohio. But, and everybody, particularly the federal government, I shouldn't say everybody, the federal government wants us all to drive electric cars. Well, if we all drive electric cars and we go home tonight and plug those in, we'd have rolling blackouts across all of Ohio and all of this country. And so we have to get our energy policy first. And by the way, if the federal government and Democrats want us all to drive electric cars, how much gas and other energy does it take to create batteries and create electric cars? So I think there has to be more debate on the subject matter before we get too forward on some of these issues about electric cars and renewable energy. And as it relates to the Senate bill that passed when it comes to renewable projects here locally, I thought it was a good bill. I think we can still work and massage it to make it a little bit better, but I do support personal property rights. And I think zoning laws and other things that can be in place so a community knows where the development can take place and where it can't. And so I think having local decision making is important in that process.
A number of bills in the state legislature over the past year have addressed hot button and divisive issues of the day. And I want to start with the question of legalized abortion and reproductive rights, which, of course, as you both know, the Supreme Court tossed back to the states earlier this year. And I know that you're on different sides of the issue, so I'm not going to ask about that or get into a debate on that point. Instead, I'm going to ask you to address me as though I am a constituent who feels the opposite of you, because as you both know, there are those who agree with your stance, your respective stances, and those who don't, and you would represent all of them. So address me as though I am a constituent who feels the opposite of you. Convince me that you hear me, even though you don't agree with me. And we'll start with Mr. Cross.
Well, first, Chris, I would say to you that certainly over the last 4 years, the constituency of the 83rd District knows my position as a pro-life legislator. I believe in life, and I believe it's important, and it's an issue that I think, being 42 years of age, agreed upon, and 42 years from now probably will never be agreed upon. And I would just probably say that if you had a different viewpoint than I did, that we may respectfully agree to disagree on whatever issue that you want to debate about, or whether you think it's right or wrong, you think it's a medical procedure or not. This issue, the Second Amendment right issue, for me is it's just clear cut. When bills come to the floor, the voters know that I'm just going to have a very lock solid position. I'm just going to continue to support life. And that sadly, I think that an abortion when it happens, no matter when it happens, is not necessarily a healthcare issue. It's ending a life. And, you know, when I confront my God and go to the pearly gates, that I did what I thought was right on that issue, and he would feel the same and let me in, because life is so valuable and we take it for granted because we're here. And I'm looking for, we've passed the heartbeat bill, we've passed other pieces of legislation. I would just tell you that even if you disagree with me, I would just be respectful of your viewpoint, and that we just maybe agree to disagree on this issue.
Ms. Osborne?
So I would say that I understand that this topic can be really hard. It is one that is often filled with emotions, because each person, myself included and the person I'm talking to, feel really deeply in their beliefs, and that is okay to feel that way. When government comes in and makes laws where doctors and patients should be having conversations instead, what we do is end up creating more hurt and pain in our communities. I have a friend who got pregnant by in vitro fertilization, and she has 5 embryos left frozen. One of them is probably viable and that she'll use later down the road. But some of these laws will mean that she'll have to potentially bring 4 more to term as well. So where she and her family were planning, when you agree that a life begins at conception, then IVF becomes something that's not really going to happen in our state. And so while your intentions are so very valid for your beliefs, they have no place in our government, because the doctors and the patients should be having these conversations.
Earlier this year, a bill aimed at regulating school curriculums to keep out what some see as divisive concepts was introduced in the legislature. Proponents cited concepts such as critical race theory, so-called diversity, equity, and inclusion, learning outcomes, discussion of gender in elementary schools, and so on. My question, what should the state's role be in dictating curriculum to local school districts, especially when it comes to difficult topics such as this? And Ms. Osborne, we'll start with you.
Yes. So I remember, Chris, you and I had this conversation a while ago, and I trust teachers who have gone through tons of education. They've all at least received a bachelor's degree. Many more of them actually have master's degrees, and they follow a code of ethics, and they work through these things. And so I have every faith in the teachers of a classroom to be able to have these difficult conversations with students around race, gender, and sexuality, because that is a place where young people are learning to have difficult conversations. If we refuse to have difficult conversations in the classroom, where are they going to learn how to have those conversations? How are they going to become adults who have to have conversations with people that disagree with them or their family's beliefs every single day? I also, you know, have a lot of trust in our school systems as a whole, that maybe a teacher does say something that upsets another student. You know, I know working with youth, they come in every day having these conversations, and they go to their parents to have that talk. And then they go to school officials if it really was inappropriate, and then they have these conversations. So I trust teachers to be able to have these conversations. And I think if we continue to pit the laws against teachers and have these attacks on the classrooms and what you can and cannot learn and talk about, we're going to lose teachers. And we already don't have enough. And they're already overworked and underpaid and are struggling with all kinds of things going on in their classrooms. And we're stripping them of any kinds of tools for youth to learn how to have these conversations. So I think the state should not be mandating these sorts of things. And I think that parents should talk to their children and have these conversations at home as well as in the classroom.
Mr. Cross?
Yeah, thank you. We had a couple of bills in the legislature that dealt with critical race theory. And if anyone could really define what critical race theory is, I'll take you down to Wilson's and buy a cheeseburger, because I don't think anyone can come up with the right exact answer. But what we need to do is get back to teaching the fundamentals in the classroom, which is reading, writing, and arithmetic. We have to get these children prepared for their futures, for their careers, for workforce readiness. And there's a balance. So first, I would say, you know, elected officials are school board members. And school board members are just as held accountable as any other elected official. And we're encouraging parents to be involved in their student son or daughter's curriculum. And when they feel like something isn't right, they certainly should say something to their school district, work with their principals, superintendents, and their elected school board leaders. There's a balance that I think that we have to make sure that we're just not dictating curriculum from the top down from the state of Ohio, but finding a good balance. And a good example would be that we recently passed a bill to add financial literacy inside the classroom, because we wanted to make sure our students could understand balancing a checkbook or understanding, you know, financial management and financial money when they get out into the workforce. The common sense, practical skill sets that are needed. Sometimes even just learning how to have a good handshake and look someone in the eye and say, I want to come work for you, and I'm going to show up on time and do my best. And so I think there's a balance, and I would not want to try to overreach and tell a school district all curriculum, but I'm there's a lot of distractions in this world, and I think there are things that are very political and very divisive, and issues that are very divisive. And I think they just need to stay out of our classroom and just focus on the core fundamentals of the subject matters that matter once these children go into further education or careers.
While we're on the subject of schools, school security is certainly a top of mind issue for many individuals. Recently, there were a number of swatting incidents in schools at Findlay High School and elsewhere in the state of Ohio just within the past week. Certainly, we've heard about violence in our schools, not just in Ohio, but elsewhere. The state has made it easier to have certain staff be armed in schools. What are the most effective ways, or how could we be more effective at improving security in our schools in the state of Ohio? And Mr. Cross, we'll start with you.
Well, thank you very much. Actually, I was on the way up here. I was listening to the WFIN report and hearing about the incident where last week I had a number of House members call me and say, hey, we heard Findlay had an incident, but so did in several other school districts. So there's been legislation that's certainly been introduced. We'll take a look at that here as we come back to session in November. But I supported House Bill 99 that allowed some of our teachers and staff to be armed in the classroom. And quite frankly, Chris, in this scenario, particularly in Hardin County, confidentially I knew of schools that already had staff and teachers that were armed because it was a local school board decision. Where we may have a resource officer in place, it may take law enforcement several minutes to get to one of our very rural school districts. And there are teachers who are excellent hunters and outdoorsmen and can handle a gun in a situation like this with proper training. I hope it's the best tool they never have to use. And as Kenton is building a new school district, I can tell you right now that the superintendent is working already on ways to, as they construct the building, think about safety and improvement and those costs that are incorporated. So for school districts that are building new schools, great. I think they can have a fresh plan to build safety features into their schools. For schools that have been around for a while, how can we help supply them with money and financial assistance to make sure our schools are safe? But the best, I've always said, and the most inexpensive way is to put a big sign out front. And this is a little tongue-in-cheek, but to put a big sign out front that says, we will protect our students and staff at all costs. Don't come in here. Don't do bad things to us. It's deterring those who want to do harm, and I just, sadly, in this world, you can't stop everybody who wants to do something bad, so we just have to work on the preventive measures to keep people safe.
Ms. Osborne?
Thank you. So for one, just to hit on the last conversation, critical race theory is when you look at various systems that we have through a lens of race. So I do want a cheeseburger. But
we'll debate that.
I don't, my mom is a school, my mom is also a veteran. And this bill has seriously worked her up because most school shooters are the students of that school themselves. And we're asking our teachers to potentially shoot and murder their own students in order to protect the other schools. And regardless of if it is a justified shooting, it is still going to be something that is traumatic. My mom is still going to be somebody who had a connection to that youth that she would have had to shoot in order to protect the rest of the school. And I don't think our teachers should be the ones to have to do that. And I don't think we think enough about the trauma that is caused when these incidences happen. Not even when it's just a scare. The trauma that our students are going through. And I don't have all the answers to definitely keep our schools more safe, because it's a very complex issue. Not only is the United States just rampant on gun crime in general and those kind of things. We also have a lot of violent crimes, so it's not just a gun issue, and I can recognize that when it comes to these sort of things. It is a larger issue, and I think we combat it the most by being whole communities where people can belong together, where we feel that shared sense of value and community. I think that is the best way to prevent our communities from these types of violence.
I want to take a moment while we're, again, on the subject of education and take a broad view. There are a number of challenges facing education in Ohio and elsewhere. Claire, you mentioned the teacher shortage that many states, including Ohio and many districts, are facing. John, you mentioned career readiness as a priority. I want to ask you both about the key issues and the key ways to improve education as a whole in the state of Ohio. And Ms. Osborne, we'll start with you.
I think one of the first things that we can do, which will not only make our teachers happy and our students happy, is get rid of some of the standardized testing. What we're seeing from colleges already is that they are no longer requiring ACT or SAT scores to be admitted to college. And I think we spend a lot of time preparing students for these tests that then take them out of their schedule for a whole week while they go through it. I think that's one way that we can honor the teachers and trust them and to be teaching and come up with a different way using the youth voice and teachers on how to measure success and growth of our students in their education system. I also think we can do it better by incentivizing more teachers to enter the workforce. If we have more teachers, we can hopefully get smaller class sizes and have that more one-on-one. And I also think we should really look at what schools are doing really well. I know Van Buren has an excellent system where youth who are autistic or have other disabilities, they can go and spend time there. And I know a lot of parents talk about Van Buren being the best for that. And I know a lot of youth who talk about it. So I think we should really look at what parents, teachers, and students all really like about their schools and use a strength-based approach to build up all of our schools in the community.
Mr. Cross?
Yeah, Chris, I would say that that the competition is a healthy thing. I think, you know, school choice, giving parents the ability to put their son and daughter in the best school district and the best school system that they can. School choice, that means which Friday night football team is my daughter going to play for, or sports are going to play for, particularly in Hardin County. You know, we don't have a lot of private schools. So, you know, there's competition, which I think is healthy within the education system. Claire will be glad to know that we have already accomplished moving standardized testing. I led the a bill that was signed into law by the governor to remove the ACT requirements in connection with revamping our school report cards. Our school report cards are awful. Our schools are much better than what our report cards show, and these letter grades that we got rid of was really an economic development and workforce development hindrance against the community. Findlay School District is fantastic. Any of our school districts in Hancock County, I would take compared to several other states. So we worked on improving the school report card to have a better accurate show of what's happening in that community. Two, all juniors had to take the ACT test. Now they can opt in or opt out. And they were taking all those test scores to determine your career readiness score for the school report card. It didn't make any sense because, you know, there's a junior in there who didn't want to go to college who's going to fill out the ACT in 5 minutes, turn it in, and it's going to skew the score for the whole district. So we passed that bill as a start to doing that. And also, you know, I think continuing to properly fund our school districts so we don't have to force levy upon levy upon levy, putting financial pressure on the local taxpayers. The first dollar we invest in our state budget should be in education, so we can lower the requirements or lessen the requirements of having levies.
I want to move on. In January, Ohio will become the latest state to legalize sports wagering. Do you support this expansion of gambling in the state, and why or why not? And we'll start with Mr. Cross.
I do and have and supported the legislation. You know, other states have. Once again, I think it's a competition thing. It's much like the name and licensure bill that we passed in the legislature, allowing sports athletes in college to get paid. The challenge with all this is if you don't pass these bills, if you don't pass the name and licensure bill, which I probably really wasn't a fan of, but I felt inclined to pass the bill because if we don't pass the bill, Ohio is going to lose all those college recruits to other states. And once again, we don't want to be in the position of losing talented people both inside the classroom and on the field to other states because we didn't have those. Same with sports betting. Sports betting, I love betting on the horses at the Hardin County Fair, right? But other than that, I don't really bet. But I do know the job creation, economic development, tourism activity that follows that industry could be an important boom for Ohio. And if Ohio doesn't have it, once again, we lose out where people go to other states and spend their money elsewhere. I think it's important for those reasons that we have that here in Ohio.
Ms. Osborne?
I'm actually very excited that Representative John Cross and I agree on something. I also, you know, agree that with all of his points about people would leave the state, we also have a lot of really good resources for people who do develop gambling addictions. And as long as we continue to put those prevention efforts forward, as long with the treatment efforts, I think it's going to be an opportunity for Ohio. It's going to keep people here or encourage people to come here. So that's all.
Well, as long as we have some agreement on one issue that was once seen as quite divisive, let's try another. There is an effort underway, another effort underway to legalize recreational marijuana use in Ohio. Do you support or oppose the idea of legalized marijuana and why? And we'll start with Ms. Osborne.
Yes. So as most people know, if you go to my website, I am somebody in long-term recovery. However, I do support legalization of marijuana in the state of Ohio. We will lose other people to other states. I know several people firsthand who quickly moved to Colorado when they became one of the first states to legalize it. I think a lot of the conversation around marijuana and marijuana legalization has unfortunately been hurt by the federal government not removing it as a Schedule I. So we have not had as much research as necessary into different ways that we can help prevention as well as see different things that marijuana may do to the brain. However, we know that alcohol is also a very dangerous chemical. to one's body and to one's mind, and we do allow that in the state. And so I think moving forward, we should legalize recreational marijuana, and then we can continue to make sure that we are keeping it out of the hands of our youth and people whose brains are not fully developed to be able to make those decisions, and then make sure that we're not losing good people to other states.
Mr. Cross?
Thanks, Chris. I respectfully have a different opinion. I strongly oppose legalizing marijuana in Ohio. However, in listening to my constituency, I don't know if I would use the word strongly, but I do know that in talking with law enforcement and talking about the subject matter to constituents around the 8th District, they too seem to oppose having that. And why I believe it's not right for Ohio is because I have seen states, I have been to states, my father-in-law and mother-in-law who live in Nevada where it's legalized. I don't want our neighborhoods smelling like pot. I don't want our communities and businesses and billboards everywhere for drugs. I don't want it to be a leading cause of other drug use. I don't want the cartels to prosper here. You know, I don't want drug trafficking to continue here. You know, there are, in talking to my father-in-law, who's a doctor in Colorado when they first passed it, there was uncontrollable vomiting in the ERs because, Chris, if you used marijuana in the 60s, it's not the same as it is today. So it's very potent. It's a lot different than moms and dads that might have smoked it in the 60s and 70s. So I see a lot wrong with it. I think there's other ways. And by the way, in California and Nevada, they don't want to buy it legalized because they don't want to pay tax on it. So it only enforces people to go back to the streets to buy the drugs because even those who want it don't want to pay taxes on it. So I think there's a lot of problems with it. I would strongly oppose that law.
Finally, in the aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic, I'm just going to ask this and present this as a very open-ended. What did the state do right in dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic? What would you have done differently? And I'll begin with Ross.
Thank you. What the state did wrong that we fixed is a bill that I authored called the Business Fairness Act, where at one point we were determining businesses and employees that were essential versus non-essential. All businesses and all employees in Ohio are essential. They're essential to our economy. They're essential to our way of life. The Business Fairness Act, which we signed into law, will now never prevent a governor or anyone from shutting down a business or operation as long as they can follow the health protocols in place. And I think that was super critical to balance keeping our economy, our jobs, our way of life going on. And I don't think government mandates is where we also got it wrong too. Having any kind of government mandates telling someone to do something within that health area is where we shouldn't be at. But we've learned a lot. We learned what was right and wrong. I think Ohioans were very vocal about it. And I'm pretty confident moving forward that the private sector, the communities in general, will know how to handle this themselves before any government action should take place. Because we watched it happen. We watched Whirlpool and other companies, small business owners, keep their employees safe because you can't be open for business if you don't have employees. And you can't be open for business if you don't have employees and customers, whether and kids in schools and you name it. So people at church. I think we got a few things wrong. I think the legislature corrected some of that, and let's just hope we never have to go through that ever again.
Ms. Osborne?
I really appreciated the response early on. I think one of the smartest things that happened in the early days was when the Arnold Classic was canceled. I think that could have been a lot worse for the area had that continued to go on. I agree with Representative Cross to an extent when we talk about what businesses had to close and which ones got to stay open. There was some inconsistencies there, and a lot of the big businesses got to stay open while the smaller ones had to close. However, I really believe that public health officials are an expert at public health. And when we say things that like government shouldn't mandate X, Y, and Z, it puts us in a really dangerous position for the future because things like this will happen again. I think of my time in nursing school and when we talked tuberculosis and what that looks like when it comes to health mandates and things like that. If we continue to weaken the community's trust in public health and public health in general, we are going to set ourselves up for a potential where something worse than COVID might come, and then we are going to be in this divisive situation where people aren't going to want to do anything about it until it's already too late. And so I think that there's a really good balance that can be found between a person's personal liberties and rights and the government ensuring that the public is safe. I think especially when it comes to big gatherings, to big close-knit workforces, there's a responsibility to make sure that those places are safe. We already have rules where your employer has to keep you safe from certain communicable diseases. You have to have certain things on hand to protect you. And moving forward, those might be things that we have to do again. And we can do it in a way where we are encouraging small businesses to still be able to thrive while also protecting the public health as a whole.
Chris, would you add the rules, but would you allow us to do a five-second follow-up if for each side?
Go ahead.
Just, I wanted to add to that, which is, I think, you know, health boards and public safety, as Claire's talked about, is important, but I think we need to change the health boards to be accountable to somebody. And in Ohio, health board members of public health boards are appointed every 5 years. I'm going to look at legislation to shorten that, because if you have a new mayor that comes in or a township trustee, they can't remove a board member off of public health until that 5 years is up. So I think having checks and balances at a local level, like a school board, allowing mayors and trustees and county commissioners the ability to appoint board members, rotate things out so with better accountability.
Ms. Osborne, any follow up on that?
No, I got nothing.
All right. And that will draw our question and answer portion to a close, and we will proceed to closing comments, and we'll begin with Ms. Osborne.
Yes, thank you. As we move forward to November and picking a representative for this area, I encourage you to think about what our communities really need in terms of belonging and acceptance and those kind of things moving forward, and how we can become passionate about our communities again and get along again and have hard conversations again where it's not so divisive. I am very thankful that Representative John Cross came up here and did this with me today, because it's important that we have a choice in November. Every single time, every election, we should have choices. I care about everybody in the 83rd, and I deeply care about the state of Ohio. I live here, and I want to continue to love where I live, and I want to continue to have the best things that we can have. I want to look to other states and wish we had things. So I hope to have your vote and support in November. You can find out more about the campaign at claireforohio.com, and thank you very much.
Mr. Cross?
Thanks, Chris. I wish... We need WFIN to sell more advertising so we can do 30 more minutes of this, because I feel like I've still got lots of fun things to say. But I appreciate the opportunity to come in here and talk about some good issues that we're working on. Let me also add, this job is about a couple things. Oh, in addition to passing laws or working on reforms, you got to help constituents out. You know, you have to sit there and help the hundreds of people that we helped who were on unemployment who couldn't get paid during COVID, and you fight through the government red tape, which there is a lot of. When you had, you know, someone at Walmart walk up to me and say, John, you know, thank you for helping me out because I wasn't going to be able to feed my family or choose how I was going to spend my money. Thank you. So the constituent work is really important. It's an important part of this job. The other important is your tax dollars that go to Columbus, how do we get those back? You know, I was pleased to help champion to get the $60 million to help fix the flood issue here in Findlay. We put a $1.4 million to the YMCA for the Children's Development Center, $100,000 for the Women's Resource Center, $500,000 for 50 North to help them expand their Senior Citizen Center, almost $500,000 to one of our local parks. It's bringing back our hard-earned dollars that we send to Columbus. We try to bring those back. Anyone that knows me knows we're going to go down there and stand strong. We're going to speak our voice. We're going to represent the 83rd District the best we can to help our constituents, to pass good common sense laws, to continue to fight for our freedom and our rights. And to summarize this, and I'll say it till I'm termed out of office, to make the 83rd District safer, stronger, and keep this place open for business. It's an honor to serve. I'm asking for a vote of re-election, and I appreciate the support of the community. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us tonight. We would also like to thank the candidates for taking part in this evening's forum. A reminder that the deadline to register to vote in the general election is October 11th. Early voting begins October 12th. The election day itself is Tuesday, November 8th. Thank you very much. Good night.